Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's talk some Mavs Jazz here, but I also want to talk about the Stars and their trip to Finland and how they've really secured the, Finnish talent exchange, if you want to describe it like that.
Explain that to me.
Okay, do you want me to start with that?
Nobody even knows where Finland is.
Okay, I mean, you might actually have a point about that. I guess if you put a map in front of everyone, it could be difficult, but give me cut number 10 for a blast from the past.
Jiri Lehtinen, the fifth Dallas shooter. No one has scored yet. Lehtinen, shot it, scores!
So, Jiri Lehtinen, he visited Dallas in March, put in a good word with the Stars front office about R2 Heiri, maybe Heiri if you're fancy, in Finland's top professional league. And he's been a big part of, because obviously he's Finnish as well, and he eventually signed a 2-year entry-level contract with the Stars. They have a handful of Finnish players that Lehtinen has helped out with. And so I think it's just cool because now they're in Finland. They're going to play, I believe it's the Panthers, Friday and Saturday. That game on Friday is during our show.
You know where Finland, you know what they're known for?
What's that? Finnish people.
The happiest country in the world.
Really?
Right now, the Stars are considered to be in the happiest country in the world.
So how do they come to that conclusion?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
They must have Disney Worlds everywhere.
They play at noon our time against the Panthers on Friday, and then 10 a.m. against the Panthers on Saturday. So I just think it's really cool that how a player from your past has kept that connection going and helped the Stars, like, I don't know if you want to say like a pipeline of players from there, but it is pretty cool that the Stars have picked up a whole bunch of like young Finnish players in part because of the recommendation of Jiri Lehtinen. And then you look at their team right now, Esa Lindell, Rope, and Amiro are all Finnish players and clearly big part of this team. Wow. Well, you can make an argument two of those players are two of your best five or six players.
Yeah, for sure. And it was like the Mavs at one point they're the Euro connection, right?
That's true.
And now we're the Finnish connection.
Yes. And look,
even though we're not a Finnish product.
Oh my God.
It costs 6.8% less to live in Finland than the United States.
So you're just doing a totally different thing.
I wasn't listening. I know.
Okay.
I didn't even know the Stars were in Finland. It's in Northern Europe.
Okay.
Next to the meatballs.
Near Sweden.
Huh? You got it.
Swedish meatballs.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You ever been to IKEA, bro?
I have. Yeah. It's not immediately when somebody says it's the meatballs, I don't think Sweden.
Don't think Italy. I was there. They don't do meatballs.
Okay.
Yeah, went to Italy. Couldn't find a meatball. They're called poplets over
faux
there.
Faux pas?
Uh-huh.
They're poplets. I don't know
so,
why.
The Stars have had a Finnish player on their roster every year since 1993. And Jiri,
they weren't even the Dallas Stars then.
I'm trying my best.
They get here in 93-94.
Would you guys, wouldn't that count then since 1993?
Yeah, that would.
Okay, thank you. So from Lehtinen to Heiskanen to Hintz, that's all I wanted to tell you. The Stars are in Finland. They play the Panthers on Friday and Saturday.
This is breaking
news. I think it's really neat that they have this Finnish connection, and it's been going on for years and years and years.
Isn't that a gym?
And that is the fitness connection, I believe.
I like it. Hey, so when we moved from Minnesota to Dallas, the ownership and the general managers and stuff said we have to have a Finland on our team?
No, if that is how it went down, that we have to have, quote, a Finland.
Because Minnesota really screwed over the Finlands?
I don't believe that is the case. I think that is just a coincidence.
They speak Finnish there, but also English.
Okay, that is fantastic. Thank you very much.
Do you want to know about their summer times?
No, I don't. Let me guess. And the living's easy, right?
Well, it That's just a sublime says that song it's right around there, 68 degrees Fahrenheit, but especially in the southern and central parts of the country, it can get much warmer than that.
All right. Thank you very much, Professor Bassick, for your insights.
I didn't even know where Finland was. Like, this is what I learned today. When I go home and my parents ask me what I learned today at school or work, I'm going to say I learned where Finland is. And I learned that it's considered the happiest place in the world.
Does Mike Bassick Sr. every day, like, hey, Mike, what did you learn
it's
today?
It's mandatory.
Is it? Man, yeah. You're going to tell me you learned a lot about the court system today.
Oh, yeah, I have to go to court today. My kid. Way to go, kid.
All right. I'm going to give it a shot and transition.
Go. Let's go Mavs.
To Mavs.
Kevin, I appreciate.
We had Michael Finley.
Your efforts. Regarding the Stars.
Thank you. I really gave it a shot. I feel like I got shouted down pretty hard for this first half of the segment. So instead, let's go to cut number 8 and talk about the Mavericks.
And Kyrie, a little stop and go, move up the baseline. Dinwiddie, an exclamation point on what he's done in the third quarter.
All right. Now, you've talked about this a couple of times in crosstalk and throughout the day, how maybe this was not the most inspired Mavericks effort. I would argue, though, the bench play was...
It was nice.
...worlds better than you saw against the Suns. You only scored 9 bench points against the Suns.
Oh, then it was better.
Yesterday, 33.
Yeah, it just... I did not...
I'm not saying it was a great game across the board.
I was watching more baseball than basketball, but okay. I was flipping over there, and every time I watched, the Mavericks as a whole played like crap.
Okay.
Like, it was like... They were up by 2 or up by 4 and barely holding on. And then I would be like, all right, back to baseball. And then I'd turn it back 5 minutes later or something, and they'd be up by 10 or 12 points. And then the 2 minutes I watched, they'd get it back down to 4. It was just horrible basketball. But to your point, there were some guys that had some nice numbers.
I thought defensively they played better in spurts than they had.
They were playing the Jazz, too, which helped out.
Fair. I do not think the Jazz are a good team. I wanted to throw this out there in terms of the Mavericks. Let's say offensive struggles thus far. They've not been shooting the ball very well. They shot 45.
Luka only missed 17 yesterday.
Yeah, that was tough. The game before, fantastic. This game, a little tougher. But Jason Kidd threw out something that I thought made a lot of sense, and it gives me a lot of optimism. It's just been 3 games, but the Mavs have been getting a ton of open looks. And Jason Kidd said, look, we're not shooting the ball well right now, but we're getting wide open looks that just haven't gone down. It's early. If we get these shots all season, we believe that we're going to be one of the best offensive teams in the league. 3 games, small sample size. You get to see him play again tonight against the Timberwolves. But they have been getting a ton of open shots to start the season.
Yeah, I do like at times their movement off the ball. We saw this a little bit last year. I think we're seeing it a little bit more having Klay Thompson on the team. Last night, I remember at times going, Luka, like, nothing against you, man, but you stink tonight. And he still wanted to kind of one-on-one at times. And I get it because he's arguably the best in the game at it.
Sure.
But I do like at times how the Mavericks have, there's more movement off of the ball. And I don't know if it's just because Klay Thompson's on the team.
Yeah, that's a huge factor there. He's used to running.
If Jason Kidd is like, we have to have a little bit more movement. We do. The stand around game really works for Luka, but... And it works at times for Kyrie, but does it really work for us in general? And so, yeah, I'm with them. The thing is they can get some bad shots too based off. I feel like Luka's pushing the ball at times, but man, he can still get that shot clock down to a low point where you're a little bit stuck on what you're going to do in the end.
You're lucky you have a guy in Klay that can catch and shoot.
Man,
you know,
he can still do it.
Yeah. He does.
I tweeted one thing last night, and I just tweeted, he's still good at basketball.
He is.
Klay is still good.
Like, he's 45% from 3 right now.
Wow. And isn't that probably the most important, like, potential development? I know we still need to talk about Grimes and Marshall and how they're going to fit into the system and how they can play, but this feels like the thing that everyone was waiting to see, and thus far... Hooray.
Even Devin Harris late in the game, he kind of had a mid-post fadeaway shot that went in. And Devin Harris, who played against Klay Thompson, who's been in the league for a lot of Klay Thompson's years, and he hasn't the last few years, is like, I don't remember him having that in his game where he kind of had like a 15-foot kind of post situation where he just turns on a smaller guy and puts that ball in. So I've been really impressed. Offensively, it does look like you have a real third guy. And I hate doing this. I guess this is just who I am. I'm sorry. But when he's shooting the ball, I just feel 1,000 times better than when Tim Hardaway Jr. was doing it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I get that.
Absolutely. And I feel like when he needs one of the critical ones, he has the ability and knows how to make those too. Like, that's a big deal. And the movement part of it, you're right. That's been their offense for how many years now, where they were like, we're not moving. You go stand in a corner. When you have players that have the ability to do it, that have the ability to shoot from, like Clay can shoot from the corner, the top, he can shoot from anywhere.
Yeah.
And that helps a lot because you can't just go be in one place defensively against them.
I did want to shout out Spencer Dinwiddie as well.
Very good job.
And all of that happened in the third quarter. He was awesome in the third quarter. He was scoreless in the first half, 11 points. In the third quarter alone. And you're going to need to win some of these games. You're going to need those scoring bursts from Dinwiddie or Washington or like not your most.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Primary players that you're like, hey, I need you to just kind of like go off in this quarter or this game to go ahead and pick you up the win. I wanted to ask about one other side note. We've talked a lot about like things across the NBA, and y'all have talked about the potential of the Orlando Magic moving up in the world.
Get some Paolo, huh?
Man, last night, 50 points, 13 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 blocks, and 3 three-pointers. Now, I know that's a very specific stat line, but he's the first player ever to hit that number with points, rebounds, assists, and blocks. But more importantly, he was close to a 50-point triple-double, and probably more importantly, it looks like he's ready to take that next step up that the team is going to need if they as a team are going to step up.
Yeah, that's a team I was really interested in coming into this year, and I do feel like that they have a good chance to be a top-4 team, win a round in the playoffs, and then you never know if the matchup is right. Like, I won't say now they're better than Milwaukee because Milwaukee has experience on their side and Giannis has won a championship, this and that. But I think teams like that, I don't think Boston has to worry about Orlando yet.
I think that's fair. I think Boston a different level than everybody.
But I do think teams like Milwaukee that are Cleveland, I think Cleveland beat them last year in the playoffs, right?
I think
knocked
that is,
them out.
Yes.
It's like, I think those teams who have like looked at Orlando's like, yeah, they could every once in a while come up and make the playoffs, but we'll beat them. I think those teams are, it's only 4 games, but going, hey, this Orlando team might become a team we don't want to play in the playoffs.
And you're starting to see like all the draft picks they've made pay off, right? Like, obviously.
Takes time sometimes, right?
Yes. Obviously, Paolo, but Wagner, Suggs, Anthony Black, even Wendell Carter, not for them, right. But he's found a role with the Magic where he can kind of be that old school power forward turn center that we were kind of wondering how much does that fit in the modern NBA. He seems to have found that role. So I think watching the Magic early this year has been super, super fun. And then one more thing I wanted to throw out there. The Ringer made a prediction that Luka will lead the league in points and assists. What do you think are the probabilities of that? And how long do you think it's been since that happened?
Points and assists?
And assists.
Crap, was it James Harden?
Way longer ago.
Oscar Robertson.
That is a great guess. It was actually Nate Archibald. I'm going to have to go look at these MVP votes because he led the league in points with 34 and assists with 11.4 per game. And he finished 3rd for MVP. Now, it is true his team, Kansas City Omaha, was not very good. They were the Kings. The NBA used to be wild.
There's Omaha and... Hold on. I'm confused.
Yeah,
they were the Kansas City Omaha Kings.
They just represented... Why did it just be the Kansas Kings? sounds better too.
That's a good question. I'll
just represent,
look into that.
I guess it's Omaha, Nebraska.
Or maybe, well, it's Kansas City, Omaha. So would it be a street called Omaha?
I will let you guys break that down in the break. Fine. Coming up next.
I don't think he's going to lead the league in assists.
Okay. But points?
I want him to.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah. He takes 22 shots a game.
Coming up next, we go across the NFC East. Plus, Mike likes it. Oh. Plus, nobody cares about your fantasy football team, but today we do. So give us your triumphs and heartbreaks. We'll do it all next right here on The Fan.
They bring three. Daniels backing up. He's just going to have to let one fly. Goes to the right side. Steps away from the defenders. Gives himself some time. Now steps up, fires, heads towards the end zone. It is
see Masterpiece right here on 105 through the Fan. That's another view. We talked about it yesterday. I guess another call from the Commanders, Hail Mary, because it's time to go across the NFC East, but also we want to get your fantasy football heartbreak or triumph this week. All right. Always choose your own adventure as we go across the NFC East. Would you like to start with the Commanders?
Heck yeah, baby. First place.
Jaden Daniels held on to the ball for 12.79 seconds during that game-winning Hail Mary to Noah Brown. It was the first TD pass with a time to throw of more than 10 seconds in the next-gen stats era, which started in 2016. So, longest someone has ever had to throw the ball on a touchdown pass.
So, something probably happened since the merger. Is what
yes.
you're saying.
Since the merger, I would agree with that.
But nobody's been keeping up with that.
Exactly. Gotcha. The throw was in the air for 54.5 yards. It was the second longest game-winning touchdown pass by a rookie as time expired in NFL history. Behind?
Aaron Rodgers.
Nope. Significantly worse. Significantly worse.
Chad Hutchinson.
Jamarcus Russell.
Drew Henson.
Maybe on that level.
Quincy Carter.
Behind a 56-yard touchdown pass from Tim Couch to Kevin Johnson in 1999.
Dude, have some of their rookie cards if you're looking for them.
Some of the Tim Couch rookie cards?
Cousin Kevin Johnson. They're in the same class.
Cool.
Sucked.
Thanks, Mike. Come out to Buffalo Wild Wings and Grapevine.
Maybe, I'll tell you what.
Maybe we can make that happen for
you.
I think
I know what box I have all those Tim Couches in. Derek Holland, I'm sure you want him.
Maybe we can get Derek to show up. All right. Let's talk about the Commanders' defense. Now, we go back about 5 weeks. Their defense had been awful. First three games, Commanders' defense giving up 29.3 points per game. In four of their last five games, there is the outlier against the Ravens. In four of their last five games, they've given up 15 points or fewer in four of those five games. So the Washington defense, like as much as we talk about Jaden Daniels or Terry McLaurin, their defense is getting better.
Corey, how many people after the Cowboys lost the playoff game and then Dan Quinn took the head coaching job were so excited because they thought Dan Quinn was the worst defensive coordinator in the history of football?
I mean, a lot.
I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe, Cowboy fans, that you guys were so out on Dan Quinn and he was the reason that the defense was failing at the end of the year. It had nothing to do with the talent or injuries or anything like that. It was all Dan Quinn didn't know how to scheme anymore, and everybody was taking advantage of the stupid Dan Quinn.
It's interesting because they held the Cardinals to 14, which the Cardinals destroyed the Cowboys last year.
Yep.
That Cowboys defense, so that's interesting. Is the Browns, Panthers, and Bears are the other three teams. So quality opponents, not necessarily. The Bears, they still haven't figured themselves out yet, but Dan Quinn's pressure, the pressure that defense still puts on people, can be overwhelming. I mean, that's what you saw in the game against the Bears. Was Caleb Williams had a tough time knowing where he was most of that game, and whenever he can do that, if they don't choose to run the ball, that's what I would have done. If I was the Bears, I would have said, "I'm not saying Caleb, this is your game. I'm saying we're running the ball. We're going to keep this close, and hopefully that didn't happen. But they were just dropping back over and over and over. I thought that was a bad look. And then they run the ball more effectively in the second half. DeAndre Swift has a pretty significant game.
Man, that is true. And that's probably something to keep an eye out on is the red zone offense of the Commanders, because all the stats favor them in the first half against the Bears. But they ended up kicking field goals on three trips to at least the 12-yard line. Now, we talked about it with the Cowboys. It's usually opposite. They're usually like at the 30 or further away. But in this one, the Commanders, they got close three times and then field goal, field goal, field goal.
Yeah.
You guys want to go with the Eagles, the Cowboys, or the Giants?
Do you need me to spell it out
for you? No, I do not. You would like the Philadelphia Eagles. All right. There's some wild numbers happening with the Philadelphia Eagles right now. Jalen Hurts in his last three games, 42 of 59 for 706 yards. That's all fine and well. Here's the biggest deal. 9 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. This is a player that has in Hurts that has been a turnover machine. But the last three games, he's keeping it clean. If you have a fairly turnover-free Jalen Hurts, that's a scary proposition for the Eagles.
Yeah, but again, health at wide receiver has been a significant
deal. No doubt.
But I think the failures early in the year of those turnovers, because he had healthy players then too, those where they failed, he started to say, I do need to correct this because it's going to drastically change the outcome of the games. And so far, since he's been more like that, and also offensive line growing and developing, because replacing Kelsey's not easy. They were able to get the tush push a lot easier than I'd seen them do in the past because they were more connected and in sync on it.
Since you brought that up, let's talk about left tackle Fred Johnson. He gave up only one pressure on 22 pass blocking stats. That's his lowest pressure rate allowed this season. And he gave up just one pressure to Trey Hendrickson. Trey Hendrickson is a good player. That's the second lowest pressure rate allowed to Hendrickson by any offensive lineman this season. So I know you're talking about the offensive line as a whole, but I just wanted to spotlight out of the left tackle. Good game there.
Good question here, too. Kellen Moore is the offensive coordinator for them, right?
Yep.
And I wonder, did it take just a little bit for Jalen to figure out what exactly they were trying to accomplish in this offense?
Now, it's ironic the way you put that. Because in every single game this year, it takes them a little bit to figure it out. The Eagles are scoreless in the first quarter this year. In their 8 games, they have not scored one single offensive point this season.
Then they come on strong later throughout the game. Wow.
It is very strange. Because
very similar to when he was here. Right?
We've lamented the Cowboys in the first and third, the start of the first and the third quarter, and now the Eagles, they haven't scored any offensive points. All right, I got a quick knot across the NFC East note for you. Remember I told you earlier, Stephon Diggs was not going to play this week. Well, he ain't going to play the rest of the year.
Oh, no.
Stephon Diggs has a torn ACL, and Joe Flacco is starting this week, per Ian Rappaport. So you guys brought up earlier the idea of what do we do with Anthony Richardson. I feel like this is probably going to be a week-by-week proposition for now, but Joe Flacco is going to start this week, and then Stephon Diggs, that is obviously a really big blow to the Texans. He has a torn ACL, will be out for the rest of the year.
Like I said, man, you see that just running out in the open, and
you just assume the worst, right?
Yeah.
It is a weird thing, because I think Corey's right, is you'd much rather see a player get up slow when they were like in a huge collision or something like that than they were just running down, because you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not good either way, but you get it.
The Flacco move is very interesting, because Mike just like literally just brought that up earlier. That's very interesting, too, because I wonder how long they decide to stick with that.
Yeah.
Like, does a GM, to Broadus's point earlier, that the GM's job's on the line for that team / Anthony Richardson, do you save your job if Joe Flacco wins 10 games for you this year? You're 4-4. You end up going 10-7. You make the playoffs, but Anthony Richardson had nothing to do with it. Is that better?
Yeah, I don't know.
Playing Anthony Richardson, the guy you say is a franchise-changing quarterback, but he ends up being 7-10, but you see improvement?
That's a good question. I'm honestly not sure. But so a couple of very noteworthy things right there in case you missed it. Stephon Diggs, not Dings. torn ACL, out for the rest of the year, and Joe Flacco will start the next game for the Colts. Where was I? Eagles.
You're trying to come up with a Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, you're talking about Alanis Morissette?
No, it's not ironic. I got it.
Don't you think?
A little too ironic. It feels like today outside, what does it look like, Corey?
It's going to rain.
Like rain!
You know, sometimes I look at the ratings and I see that this show's very popular. Other times I think, is this show for two people? And we're all fighting against the tide.
When you said ironic about the Eagles, I looked up Alanis Morissette. She's from Canada. I was hoping she's from Philadelphia.
I like how you're like, hey, I hope they're from this one place to really hammer
this
home.
It really makes sense.
My joke. All right. Cowboys.
Third place.
I don't have a lot of positive stuff, but most of it revolves around CeeDee Lamb. Although, I do have a weird, I guess, good factoid for you about Ezekiel Elliott. He ran for a touchdown.
He did.
He has 70 rushing touchdowns as a Cowboy.
Him on that.
That actually, I was impressed at how easy that looked for him.
Yards.
I don't know about that.
Dude,
but
you know what? This has kind of stuck with me for a while now. And this is kind of interrupting everything.
Hey, as long as it's not about Alanis Morissette, you're good.
I heard he was on with G-Bag a couple weeks ago, and it was Stink.
Mark Schlereth.
And they were talking about running the ball, and he said every team he's ever consulted. This is a really good interview this day. He was talking about every team that he's ever consulted with regarding running the football, because he was part of that Denver offensive line that was very good and winning Super Bowls. He said, find the thing that you're really good at. The one thing that you know you can do 1,000 times and you're going to have success at it, rather than trying to do all these other things. Know what that one play or that one thing that you're really good at and you know you can do over and over, and then you can expand from there, because whenever it comes down to it, you call that play. You know, I know we can do this. We're probably out of 10 times, we're going to win 9 times. And I just don't know exactly what the Cowboys are good at that they can, other than CeeDee Lamb, that they feel like they can go to over and over and over that can help them. But that 1 yard run to get the touchdown, it looked very easy.
It did.
Maybe that was it.
I actually was really,
they can get it.
I was really impressed by that. He's just the third running back in Cowboys history to hit that mark. Tony Dorsett has 72 touchdowns. Emmitt Smith, of course, has 153 rushing touchdowns.
So he's got some work to do.
Yeah, he's got a chance.
He'll be second. He has no chance at being first.
Who's second?
Tony Dorsett.
Heck yeah.
All right. For CeeDee Lamb, most receptions in a player's first 5 seasons. He is now third on the list behind Michael Thomas and Jarvis Landry. He just passed Cooper Kupp and Justin Jefferson, and he's ahead of Larry Fitzgerald. So 440 catches in his first 5 seasons. That's third all time. Also, that touchdown pass where actually there were two, and one of them was because two players ran into each other. CeeDee Lamb had 16.3 yards of separation on his 7-yard touchdown catch, which is weird. It feels like you should not have more separation than number of yards there are to go, but that's the
wide open.
Yeah, that's the fourth most separation on a pass in the end zone. And again, the next gen
49ers
stats.
Had 2 pick plays that led to touchdowns.
Yes.
One for them and one for us.
Exactly. And then CeeDee Lamb has now recorded 10 or more receptions in 11 career games. That's tied with Jason Witten for the most in franchise history.
People that hate the Cowboys offense, fine. You hate it. You think Mike McCarthy's stupid. Let's just go with it. Do you give him any credit for scheming up a play that had 49ers run into each other?
Yeah, I do.
Maybe so.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying his offense is good. I'm not trying to defend him too strongly.
Well, I mean, first thing that the 682 texts in about the one thing they're good at, 7-yard curl routes. Like, that's what everybody thinks is that they're good at running and turning around, which is why Jason Garrett was moved on from, because they were doing that, which is why Kellen Moore, they were doing 7-yard curl routes. They're not as creative as they once were.
Now, give me cut number 12 if you can. The Giants, part of Monday Night Football last night.
Giants bringing pressure. Wilson lofting. Wilson has a man out there. Wilson has the touchdown. It's a second touchdown for Calvin Austin.
Now, we should have known this was going to happen because the Steelers have now won 22 straight Monday night home games. That is a step for a team that hasn't like won Super Bowl after Super Bowl as of late. That is a staggering number.
Why?
That's a good question.
I wonder what it is about Monday night.
I don't know. If they keep scheduling the Giants, they're going to win 86 more.
Interesting that you say that, and you're right. But the last game they lost on Monday Night Football at home was against the Giants in 1991.
As Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah. No, that was a much different team. I'm just saying, that's so long ago. That's amazing to me.
Barry Foster was their running back.
I will take your word for that. Now, one of the reasons...
Rodney Hampton was the running back for the Giants.
Okay, I do remember him. The other one, I don't know.
Duncanville High School, Arkansas.
I'm sorry.
Stephen Jones forgot who he was. He's on his own football team.
Oh, okay. Well, that actually makes me feel a little bit better. One of the people who was causing problems for the Giants last night, Alex Highsmith. Now, he was just picked up off the 49ers practice squad 10 days ago. Generated a career-high 12 pressures and 2 sacks on 38 pass rushes. Now, you would like to think...
And that dude was out there?
Yeah, he was out there.
To be picked up?
Yes.
By any team?
Yes.
Okay.
Who would put him on the roster? And... we were like, meh, pass. The Steelers said, we'll take him. Already paying early dividends. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Now you're caught up across the NFC East. It's time for Mike Likes It, but be prepared, Mike. We might sprinkle in some fantasy football stuff along the way.
All right, fine. Okay.
You would never do that in another segment.
So, gosh, interrupting segments. So, I get these... PDFs or whatever you want to call them, these documents from Major League Baseball every day. And I found these very interesting for game four tonight. I get it. The World Series, the first game was unbelievable. Second game was solid, but the Dodgers took a 2-0 lead. And last night, it felt like the Dodgers were in control the whole time. Yes, there was a late home run by the Yankees to make it 4-2, but they never got the tying run up. But how about this? These are some stats they say. Stats we like. The team scoring first has won all 8 World Series games over the last 2 years. So obviously this includes the Rangers. So right now, whoever scores first is 8-0 in the last 8 World Series games.
Oh,
all right.
I know that.
History was made last night in New York City. For the first time in the history of sports... your MLB team, your MLS team, your NBA team, and your NFL team lost on the same day.
Oh.
Never happened.
Ouch.
In sports. Because most likely you're not going to have MLB, MLS, NBA, NFL. Heck, a lot of teams don't have all of those.
Yeah.
And they all played last night, and they all lost? Now, you do have the help of, I guess... I'm going to say that Brooklyn doesn't count anymore.
Okay.
Because they're New Jersey / Brooklyn. I don't know if they count. Obviously, MLB and then NFL, you have two MLB teams, two NFL teams, which kind of help out. All right. The Yankees have held a lead for just 2 complete innings in the World Series. So this has been maybe a little bit more dominant than we thought. Think.
Yeah.
I know it hasn't been like blowouts, but the Yankees are not playing with the lead much. Obviously, we know that they got the lead in the 10th inning,
mm-hmm.
but because that inning hadn't been completed yet, they weren't considered to have a lead after that inning was done.
Mike, on Friday, we were talking about, hey, 10 runs, you know, last week we were like, this could be a high scoring one. But LA's been pitching so exceptional against the Yankees.
Now, how about this? When was the last time the Yankees had a home run from their starting first baseman this year?
Ooh, I feel like the way he said that, it's going to be a long time, right?
1935.
Yeah, I think Lou Gehrig hit one back then. They're in good shape then. Don Mattingly probably hit a home run.
1988.
They hit a home run. Their first basemen did hit home runs this year.
I'm going to say June.
July 31st. Okay. That is 257 consecutive homerless plate appearances by a Yankee playing first base. That is amazing to think about this. All of August, all of September, and here we are almost at the end of October.
And they're still in the World Series.
Yeah. DJ LeMahieu went deep in Philadelphia on July 31st. That's the last time the Yankees have had a home run by their first baseman.
Oof.
So I don't know if you're expecting Anthony Rizzo to go deep, but it doesn't seem like he will.
I mean, Corey's definitely not. He's like, it's been almost 100 years since this happened.
Well, you said, by the way, he's asking the question. And I was like, let's go back real far. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. How about this? Will Smith right now, our Will Smith, who's Kansas City's Will Smith, that ended, the streak ended.
Yeah.
He has 3 World Series championships. Did you know he leads all active players in World Series championships?
What?
Nobody has more than 3. In fact, nobody else has 3 in Major League Baseball.
Seager has 2.
Yeah, and like Bochy doesn't count because he's a manager. He's not a player.
Yeah.
Will Smith is the only player active right now who is considered a 3-time World Series champion. If the Dodgers win tonight, Mookie Betts and Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly's on the injured list, but those two guys, Joe Kelly's our guy from Arizona.
That's right, yeah.
Super Bowl. Those two guys would join reliever Will Smith as the only active players with 3 World Series rings.
Freeman only has 1 right now. This would be his 2nd, right?
Yep.
Wow, that's interesting. Marcus Semien has 1.
It's crazy how a reliever hasn't, I know Will Smith, but mm-hmm. how somebody hasn't popped around and has more than 3, or there's multiple guys with 3. But right now, Will Smith, the only guy, and most likely will be joined by that. Now, how about this? 3-0 World Series lead all time. 24 teams have gotten off to the 3-0 series lead. How many times has it ended in a sweep, if you were guessing, out of the 24 times?
Since 1930.
So this is the 20, I guess.
Let's say 10.
Okay.
11.
This looks like it's going to end tonight. 21 times it's ended in a 4-0 sweep.
Really? Holy crap.
Do you know how many times it's gone to a game 6 or a game 7?
I'm going to guess 1 or none.
0.
0.
The other 3 ended in 5. So for this thing to go back to...
So we're not going back to L.A.
If it goes back to L.A., this will be the first time ever anybody has been down 3-0 in the World Series and pushed it to a game 6.
Wow.
All right. We were talking earlier about Aaron Judge and how bad of a kind of streak he's on and how bad he has hit in the postseason. There are 2 players and only 2 players in the history of baseball who have a larger postseason OPS than their regular season OPS in their career. And they have to have a minimum of, it says, 150 plate appearances in the postseason. So obviously there could be people that are worse, but if they're like Mike Trout doesn't qualify, he probably has like 10 at-bats or whatever.
And you said the OPS is better in the playoffs or worse?
Obviously Aaron Judge, I'll give you, Aaron Judge is minus 277 on his OPS from regular season to postseason in his career. There's 2 people who are worse. I will give you 2 hints. One of them is a former Ranger. And to help you out, also a former Brewer.
Okay.
If that...
Prince Fielder,
minus 301 for his career. He has a 587 OPS in his career. It's interesting because it goes to power hitters. This is now arguably the ultimate power hitter with not much else.
Mark McGwire,
minus 313. He had a 669 OPS in the playoffs. He had a 982 in the regular season. So he had a major difference, too. So the person who is just behind Aaron Judge at minus 269, former Texas Ranger in the World Series and was really out of place in 2010.
Nelson Cruz.
Nope.
Oh, Vladimir
Guerrero. Because he had to play in the...
You're out of place thing kind of threw me off there.
I will say this about Aaron Judge. This is pretty high praise. Now, Aaron Judge is probably going to be a Hall of Famer. Vladimir Guerrero is. Prince Fielder, no. Mark McGwire, you could consider a maybe, but would never get in because of the steroid situation. So I find all those numbers very interesting going into tonight. Now, How much money has Walker Buehler made off of this postseason run?
So I keep thinking about a couple of months ago when somebody was like, oh, is it weighing your mind at all? Contract extension. He's like, I'm trying to prove I should stay in the league.
Yeah.
I'm not getting a contract.
Mike was asking, is he even a major league pitcher still? And we've seen over this playoff run, he's made it look like he is.
I thought I said this at the end of the regular season. I said, you know, I don't know how much money the Rangers have to spend. I don't think it's much. I think it's almost like they actually have to cut a little bit to keep type of deal. Yeah. I don't know how it all works out. I don't have everybody's contract in front of me. And then the elevated, the number that they can't hit, their budget that they have is, I thought, boy, if you're a little bit short on starting pitching, do you feel like you could fix Walker Buehler? Because he does not throw as hard as he used to. When he was one of the best pitchers in the game, along with Jacob DeGrom and a couple other guys, he used to throw the ball close to 100. He was 98-ish on his fastball. Now we see it's still hard. It's 95, 96. But I thought 1 year, $10 million, like that would probably be his market where somebody's like, hey, we think, and maybe you put incentives in there to get up to 15. If he has a heck of a year for you, you're happy to pay the extra $5 million because he started close to 30 games and had an ERA under 3. But I think what he's done in the playoffs, I know this is very different. It reminds me of Calvin Booth and Sagana Jop for the Mavericks.
Okay.
Like, you're like, they're not that good, but because of a little bit of a playoff run, Calvin Booth makes a layup and was an okay player in 2001. The Seattle Supersonics give him like a 5-year, $30 million deal. Because Sagana Jop at like a backup center making $1 million was pretty good, all of a sudden gets $30 million from the Mavericks. You're like, this is not going to end up well. You love him at $1 million, you hate him at $30 million. I'm not saying whoever gets Walker Buehler, if he stays with the Dodgers, you're going to hate him, but he's now turned himself, I think, into a guy that people will be willing to give a 3-year deal to in the offseason.
I think
at a number
right.
elevated more than $10 million per year on what he's done.
I would be interested in that pickup for sure.
I would too, but I do think this. I think the Rangers look at it and they go, we want to keep Nathan Eovaldi. That's the guy we want to keep in our rotation. Obviously, they want to keep some other guys, but they're not free agents.
And Evan Grant, I think, did tweet out that they will be operating under the tax threshold.
100%. I do know that they will not hit it.
Yeah.
So I think that probably Walker Buehler pitched himself out of the 1-year deal.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, that's awesome. Especially the like watching him pitch. He's been a blast to watch, dude.
Yeah. He's found it, like the curveball, cutter, fastball situation.
All looking like they're coming out of right the exact same area, and hitters just look clueless.
Yeah, and so tonight, I guess I'll be watching, thinking of the 2004 ALCS. I remember being at my grandparents' house and going, whatever, I'll watch it, but I don't care anymore. And that's how I feel about tonight. I'll watch it. I don't care anymore. I know the Dodgers are the world champs. It's just a matter, are they celebrating tonight? Which we found out that they have a great chance of celebrating
tonight.
That's
unbelievable.
As 21 out of 24 times this ends in a sweep, and then 3 other times it ends in game 5. So maybe they have to play tomorrow night. I hope they do. I hope this becomes a series and we go back to LA, but it looks like it's over. So it'll be on television, but I don't feel good about it.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 through the Fan. Some of your fantasy football notes from the 214. Fantasy loser here. I started Dak over Jaden Daniels this week. From the 214, I needed 14.2 points yesterday. Had flex open with Harris or Pickens. I chose Pickens, lost by 3. Harris would have won it. From the 469, I'm having a Jason Garrett year in fantasy football. I'm in 2 leagues. I'm 4-4 in both of them.
That stinks.
Man.
But you're still in it. You know what I mean? Like, you have a chance. You're around the rim, as they say.
That is true. From the 903, lost by 1 point due to Jordan Mason getting injured in the first half. We're the KNC Masterpiece. I just said that. Next, it's time for the C Block starring Corey Majors.
What is the best tough love advice you've ever been given? This is based on Sean Payton saying, just be better. Next on the Fan.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.